You're listening to the Voice of Middle-earth, program number 4, with Green Man Took and Mungo Bunce.
In Dwemardine and Lorien, seldom have walked the feet of men. Few mortal eyes have seen the light that lies there ever long and bright. Galadriel, Galadriel, clear is the water of your well. White are the stars in your white hen. And marred and stained is leaf and land in Dwemardine in Lorien, more fair than thoughts of mortal men.
I see wind of night begone, this is not your domain. In the sky a bird was heard to cry. Misty morning whisperings and gentle stirring sound belie the deathly silence that lay all around. Yet hearken, hearken to the barking of the dark fox gone to growl. See the splashing of the kingfisher flashing through the water. And a river of green sliding us in beneath the trees, laughing as it passes through the endless summer, making for the sea. In a lazy water meadow I lay me down. All around me golden sunflakes covering the ground. Basking in the sunshine of a bygone afternoon, bringing sounds of yesterday into my city room. Hear the lark and hearken to the barking of the dark fox gone to ground. See the splashing of the kingfisher flashing through the water. And a river of green is sliding unseen beneath the shrines, laughing as it passes through the endless summer, making for the sea. In a lazy water meadow I lay me down. All around me golden sunflakes covering the ground, basking in the sunshine of the bygone afternoon, bringing sounds of yesterday into my city room. Hear the lark and hearken to the barking of the dark fox come to ground. See the splashing of the kingfisher flashing through the water, and the river of green is sliding unseen beneath the trees, laughing as it passes through the endless summer, making for the sea.
Pridwin with Quickthorn, and a cover of Pink Floyd's Grant Chester Meadows from his CD Solitude Owes Me a Smile. For more information, you can visit darkhollerarts.com. Well, this is Green Man Took, and you're tuned to the Voice of Middle-earth, celebrating the vision of J.R.R. Tolkien and other mythologies, music of place and journey. Welcome aboard. For more information, you can contact www.middleearthradio.blogspot.com. Here's some music from Australia by a band that specializes in music related to J.R.R. Tolkien. This is Sound Destiny and a song from their Winds of Change CD called Your Wildest Dreams.
Dark and you're lost in desperation, all alone and troubled, and you wonder what it means when your love light doesn't shine, when there's no illumination. Close your eyes and call me, I'll be there in your wildest dreams. When the ocean is so rough and the waves keep right on pounding, the tide is swiftly turning and the shoreline can't be seen. When the water is too deep and you feel as if you're drowning, send a cry for help and I'll be there.
Only in your wildest dreams.
like a stranger from your wildest dreams. In the dark of night or stormy weather, things are not exactly what they seem.
Mongo Bunce, and you're listening to The Voice of Middle Earth, music for your journey there and back again.
Thank you.
That was music by the band Mostly Autumn, and a song called On Wings of Gwaihir. Of course, Gwaihir was the eagle that rescued Gandalf Mithrandir from Isengard, and also played a critical role in the rescuing of Frodo and Samwise from Mount Doom. On today's program, Mungo Bunce will be speaking about the King in the Mountain archetype. But first, I'd like to talk about Galadriel. Here is Gandalf's poem for Galadriel. Galadriel, Galadriel, clear is the water of your well. White is the star in your white hand. Unmarred, unstained is the leaf and land. In Dwemordine, in Lorien, more fair than thoughts of mortal men. Galadriel was an elf queen of Middle-earth, and the co-ruler of Lothlorien along with Lord Celeborn. Galadriel was the only daughter and youngest child of Finrfin, prince of the Noldor, and of Irwin, who was related to Lúthien. She appears in The Lord of the Rings, The Silmarillion, and Unfinished Tales. She was referred to as the Lady of Lórien, Lady of Light, Storm Queen, the Lady of the Galadrim, White Lady, Queen Galadriel, Sorceress of the Golden Wood, or the Lady of the Wood, interchangeably. In the extended edition of Peter Jackson's version of The Fellowship of the Ring, Gimli initially referred to Lady Galadriel as an elf witch. Within the realm of Lothlórien, she was referred to as simply Lady Galadriel or the Lady. When she and Celeborn were being referred to collectively, they were known as the Lord and Lady. Galadriel was undoubtedly one of the greatest of the Eldar in Middle-earth, and surpassed nearly all others in beauty, knowledge, and power. Tolkien thought of her, along with Gil-galad, the Elven King, as the mightiest and fairest of all the elves in Middle-earth. Here are some of the events that took place prior to the Era of the Ring. Through her kinship with Thingol, her mother's uncle, Galadriel and her brother Finrod were permitted to reside in Doriath for a time. After he left for Nargothrond, Galadriel chose to remain, for she had grown to love Thingol's kinsman Celeborn. While there she grew close to Melian, and from her learned great lore and wisdom concerning Middle-earth. Galadriel and Melian would speak sometimes of the wonders of Valinor, but of all the events after the death of the Two Trees, Galadriel would not speak. Melian was not easily deceived by the popular idea that the Noldor were messengers from the Valar. Instead, she believed that the Noldor had been driven into exile, and that an evil lay upon the sons of Feanor. One day she asked Galadriel about this, asking if she was close to the truth. Galadriel then revealed to Melian much of the tale, telling of the Silmarils, the death of King Finwë, and said that the Noldor had come from Aman of their own will. But when Melian sensed more and asked if Thingol should know of these things, Galadriel replied that he might, but not from me. Of course, Thingol eventually found out anyway. Galadriel and Celeborn were probably married during her time in Doriath. Despite the account of their meeting in the Silmarillion, it should be mentioned that in Unfinished Tales there is another version. According to that version, Galadriel met Celeborn, a Teleran prince, while visiting her kin. However, this story contradicts both the Silmarillion and the appendices of the Lord of the Rings. When Frodo visited Lothlórien with the Fellowship of the Ring, Galadriel gave Frodo the opportunity to look into her mirror to see what the fates might show him. Tolkien describes it this way. Down a long flight of steps, the lady went into a deep green hollow, through which ran murmuring the silver stream that issued from the fountain on the hill. At the bottom, upon a low pedestal carved like a branching tree, stood a basin of silver, wide and shallow, and beside it stood a silver ewer. With water from the stream, Galadriel filled the basin to the brim and breathed on it, and when the water was still again, she spoke, "Here is the mirror of Galadriel. I have brought you here so that you may look in it, if you will." So in celebration of Galadriel, we'll be hearing three songs by three different bands about Galadriel, starting with the Crossborns and Galadriel's Mirror.
Farewell, farewell. I sang all the years.
You just heard three songs about Galadriel. Caprice with Galadriel's Song. And before that, Bill Decker, The Song of Galadriel. And we started off with Crossborns and Galadriel's Mirror from their LP, Tales of a Winter's Night. This is Green Man Took, and you're listening to the voice of Middle-earth, music for your journey there and back again. Now we're going to hear from my kinsman, Mungo Bunce.
Hello, I'm Mungo Bunce, and I'm going to read to you an essay, Cain in the Mountain Archetype. Cain in the Mountain stories involve legendary heroes sleeping in remote dwellings, including caves on high mountaintops, remote islands, or supernatural worlds. The hero is frequently a historical figure of some military or rulership consequence in the history of the nation where the mountain is located. The stories gathered by the Brothers Grimm concerning Frederick Barbarossa and Charlemagne are typical of the Mountain King stories told, and have been influential on many told variants and subsequent adaptations. The presence of the hero is unsuspected until some herdsman wanders into the cave, typically looking for a lost animal, and meets the hero. The stories almost always mention the detail that the hero has grown a long beard, indicative of the long time he has slept beneath the mountain. In the Brothers Grimm version, the hero speaks with the herdsman. Their conversation typically involves the hero asking, "Do the eagles still circle the mountaintop?" The herdsman, or a mysterious voice, replies, "Yes, they still circle the mountaintop." "Then be gone, my time has not yet come." J.R.R. Tolkien uses the Cain in the Mountain in various places in his mythologies. The form of the dead men of Dunharrow, the armies in Cain of Numenor, who are trapped by the Valar when Numenor is destroyed, and in the second prophecy of Mandos, which states that the dead heroes Turin and Beren would return to help to defeat Morgoth at the end of times. Although in The Hobbit, the term Cain under the Mountain itself is used, it refers to a quite different context, the dwarf Cain who resides at the lonely mountain of Erebor. The Cain under the mountain was also by right Cain of Durin's folk. In The Hobbit, the dragon Smaug was, ironically, said to be the only Cain of Erebor. The rightful ruler, however, was Thorin Oakenshield.
Thank you.
That was Ghostfish with The Lonely King right off of a compilation album called Fairy World 2. And now on to a discussion about J.R.R. Tolkien. John Ronald Reuel Tolkien, from 1892 to 1973, lived in Oxford on and off for some 50 years. For three decades, Oxford was also full-time home to Clive Staples Lewis, author of The Chronicles of Narnia. Lewis and Tolkien first met in 1926 at a Merton College English faculty meeting, but the colleagues soon discovered they shared a like-minded interest in languages, poetry, myth, and storytelling. They both avoided contemporary culture, neither had a car nor would drive one, and both largely ignored politics and the news. And in their fledgling efforts as novelists, they served as each other's first readers. The unpayable debt that I owe to him was not influenced, but sheer encouragement, Tolkien wrote decades later. He was, for long, my only audience. The two soon became fast friends, even though Lewis had established himself in the literature faction of the English faculty, while Tolkien placed himself firmly on the linguistics and history of languages side. Tolkien most disliked most literature and found little use for any work penned after the medieval era. Together, they helped revise the English syllabus, and for the first time, the Oxford English School created a dialogue between the philology and literature camps. On to you, Green Man, for the rest of this discussion.
Thank you, Mungo. Among his colleagues, Tolkien was somewhat of an oddball. His groundbreaking essay on Beowulf and his definitive translation of Sir Gawain and the Green Knight cemented his scholarly status. But the publication of The Hobbit in 1937 and The Lord of the Rings in 1954 and 1955 clashed with his academic reputation. For Lewis, his extracurricular activities were more widely accepted. His sermons were entertaining and well-attended. In the 1940s, the Screwtape Letters were a bestseller, and their BBC broadcast made Lewis a household name. He graced the cover of Time magazine in 1947. By 1950, when the first book in his Chronicles of Narnia series, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, appeared, Lewis's fame had easily eclipsed Tolkien's. In the end, that success and other factors would eclipse their friendship as well. So on occasion, the voice of Middle-earth is going to pay homage to J.R.R. Tolkien's literary comrade, C.S. Lewis, with a little segment we'd like to call The Voice of Narnia. Here's some Narnia-themed music by Joanna Newsom. Thank you.
we fade as malleable as clay. But ships are fallible, I say, and the nautical as all things fade. But I do recall our caravel, a little wicker beetle shell with four fine masts and lateen sails, its bearings on Caparibel. Oh, my love, oh, it was a funny little thing to be the ones to see. The sight of bridges and balloons makes calm canaries irritable. They call and call afternoon cabineries and dirigibles, brace and boil the living room, a womb of metal, a warp of wimble, and a thimble's worth of milky moon can beat hearts larger than a thimble. Oh, my love, oh, it was a funny little thing to be the ones to sing. Oh, my love, oh, it was a funny little thing. It was a funny, funny little.
I'm Mungo Bunce, and you're listening to The Voice of Middle Earth, music for your journey there and back again.
As the sun rose in the sky, different valleys rolled on by until the green fields of the whole shire were now fading. And when we crossed the river wide, in the distance far behind, we saw a dark shape standing on the shoreline waiting. There's an inn we had to find, with a pony on a sign, and it was here we met a ranger sent to guide us. He would lead us on together to a hilltop worn and weathered, where we stood against the hooded faceless riders. The journey is long, the days go on and on. Gashed him, he was falling as the hero. journey is long. The days go on and on, when can we go home? The answer is unknown, far away from home. No matter where I go, no matter what I do, no one will ever know the pain that I've been through. This ring is hard to bear, it changes everything. There's danger everywhere, I don't deserve this ring. This is a cursed ring.
This has been The Voice of Middle-earth, number 4, and I'm Green Man Took. For more information, check out www.middleearthradio.blogspot.com. Wishing you much success in all your journeys.